Kevin, everything that you've said makes sense to me, but aren't you kind of trading one emergency for another? You're taking a pilot, inadvertent IMC, and you're going to end up with a pilot, presumably a VFR pilot, stuck on top and then have to deal with that. So you're kicking the can down the road. And the way I see it, they're going to have to hold wings level either way. If they've got to hold wings level, don't climb, they could make it to Olympia, just picking one. What are you gaining that makes it worthwhile to delay just resolving this thing?
Biggest thing I think I'm gaining is time and options. And I think that getting the pilot on top, like I said before, is the least precise thing he can do to get out of harm's way. And to be able to climb through the layer on top could be the fastest way out of IMC. And by getting on top and having time to sort things out, it would be able to reduce the anxiety dramatically if he's VMC but on top of a cloud layer versus in the soup. So then it opens up, do we go somewhere completely different? Or if the completely different part of it isn't an option, then from a standpoint of a much more calmer state of mind, we can reassess and come up with a plan. And if a descent into IMC is necessarily part of the way out of this, then that can be something that's discussed and you can approach it with a more deliberate attitude rather than dealing with it from a standpoint of a panic and how do we get out of this right now.
Now, Richard, you were going with option three, which is what I challenged Kevin with about going straight to Olympia. But that pilot now, all they have to do is keep the wings level and keep their altitude, which they've been doing. But it's a long time. Every second is going to like seem like an eternity waiting to break out. Why are you going that way?
Yeah, to me, those were the two choices because both of those choices don't make the pilot turn the airplane. And the initiating event for a loss of control or disorientation in IMC conditions is a turn, usually. So I like both those options. I liked the one where you stay because now you're not even requiring the pilot to change his attitude. Just stay straight and level, keep the wings like they are, don't change a thing, stare straight ahead at that attitude indicator and just keep pressing.
John, What do you think about what Richard just said? The most likely way to lose control is a turn. You're giving the pilot the biggest turn of all. So why?
Well, that's my asterisk.
That's
okay,
your asterisk.
So it's basically what I would do is, first thing you got to do is calm down the pilot, okay? And just tell him or her, you know, let's just keep the wings level. Let's get the airplane trimmed. You know, you're going to have to be a little soothing talking here. I've done a bunch of these inadvertent IMCs, and the biggest thing that you got to do is calm down the pilot. Find out what they got for instrumentation. The Sundowners, I mean, the ones that I've flown, have kind of that hodgepodge panel. The attitude indicator is not even necessarily in the middle. So, you know, just talk to them. Get them on pretty much steady on that 140 heading for a bit, and then start gradually turning towards the water. I want to turn away from the bridge at Tacoma. I'm looking at Bremerton, 400 and something feet MSL, 900 foot ceiling, you know, so you got like a 1300 foot MSL ceiling. He's at 1600 feet now. It's not far from clear air. So if we can get over towards the water on a steady heading, which would not be a 180 degree turn, it would probably be 10 or 20 degrees at a time, and just kind of bracket them around to get to the water. Once you're over the water, then we can take it from wherever we got to do there.
JP, you're heading towards Tacoma, which is probably the nearest, like, not sure thing. Nothing's a sure thing here, but it's got some decent odds. Tell me about this.
Yeah, the way I came to this conclusion, if you think about it, the pattern altitude there at Tacoma is 1,300 feet. It's 1,295, close enough there. This pilot's at 1,600 feet. The ceiling's at 1,500. If we could keep the pilot calm them down, wings level, make sure they stay away from that obstacle there at 621 feet. Don't quite descend them yet. We could pretty much, without a whole lot of turning, and about the same length of time that it would take the climb on top, descend them underneath this little bit of cloud cover here and get them lined up with runway, it would be 17 there at Tacoma, and we could probably put this thing to bed pretty quickly.
Yeah, but descending, IMC close to the ground.
I mean, it's only have to go a couple of hundred feet there. It's not that much.
Sarah, you're also thinking one, Tacoma, but you were a 1/3, kind of maybe Tacoma, maybe Olympia. Expand that for me a little bit. What's your plan to save this pilot?
One thing that I've noticed as a flight instructor is that when people start to get flustered, it generally does not get better over time. So as much as you want to be that soothing voice in their ear and help them out, and hopefully they'll regain their confidence, it's probably not going to happen in the next 5 minutes. And that's probably the most critical time. So that being said, in theory, at their current altitude, they should be able to get VFR as they approach Tacoma Narrows. So it wouldn't really require much maneuvering. It wouldn't require a climb or a descent. And the way I see it, it's kind of on the way. So if they get to Tacoma Narrows and they cannot see the airport, they can maintain VFR, then it's really not much of a turn to go ahead and head down toward Olympia.
Well, you say not much of a turn, but we're a potentially VFR-only pilot in IMC. You have them roughly heading towards Olympia. You got to give them a little turn to go to Tacoma. There's a potential for loss of control. And then if it doesn't work out, to go back to your original plan, is it worth it to buy a little bit more time in the sense of getting them in the clear sooner? It's worth trying the turn. Is that what you're saying?
I guess you can say I'm making an assumption, though, that if you're a private pilot, you've had the required amount of instrument training, the 3 hours, you get evaluated for that on your check ride. I would make the assumption that the pilot is likely capable of basic IFR procedures in the sense that, you know, a small turn or a climb or a descent, because that is something that is taught and evaluated. So I would not hesitate to ask the pilot to make a, you know, 30-degree turn in order to fly toward another airport.
Wally, going full circle here, you're with Kevin. You get this pilot to the shore VFR conditions in the short order, even if it means dealing with the problem of getting them back down later.
Yes.
Why?
My gut reaction was to do that 180-degree turn, because for so many years I've taught private pilots and others do a level 180-degree turn and allegedly fly out of the IMC you flew into. But recently, I think the philosophy is changing in the safety world. I'm reading of success stories where the controller has climbed the pilot to VFR, and then, as Kevin said, now we have a whole bunch of other options we can try to figure out how to get that pilot back. I changed one thing Kevin said. I wouldn't ask them to pitch up to VY. Climbing at VY isn't all that important right now. I would encourage them to slowly advance the power to full power and just leave the trim alone and let the airplane pitch up to whatever it's going to climb. That eliminates them fooling with the elevator and getting into a pitch oscillation. But I frankly think that's the better solution.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about the pitch attitude, because it seems like it's one of those change as few things as possible. We're making the big assumption that the pilot was trimmed in the first place, of course.
Right,
well, there's
right,
that, you know.
Right.
And you would tell them that over the radio, I take it.
Yeah, slowly advance the power. You know, what Sarah said about the pilot may or may not have 3 hours of instrument time. This may be a student pilot, or it may be a rusty private pilot that got a flight review without getting any instrument time. So the controller can't know that. And if I knew that, yes, if that was a recently certified private pilot, I'd say I'd do a 180 and go back to Boeing Field. That was my favorite. But since we don't really know, if you do that to a student pilot or a very rusty private pilot, that may be the straw that puts them in the bank angle that Richard talked about.
Well, this is definitely a series of bad decisions if this is a student pilot who is out scud running with another person on board, but it certainly could happen.
Yeah.
But they also could be a 20 years ago commercial pilot who hasn't really flown on instruments since then. I mean, we have no idea what their level of proficiency is. And probably for someone who doesn't practice, you don't even know what your own level of proficiency would be, right, until it gets tested like this. JP.
And another unknown, he or she says, I've got a couple hours of fuel. In this very stressed situation, how reliable is that information? We can take it at face value, but it might be an hour of fuel. It could be 30 minutes. We don't know, because I think the trade-out with getting this person out of instrument conditions and underneath this layer in just really a couple of minutes, they're almost there, I think outweighs putting them through it or above it and then trying to figure it out later, because we could be digging ourselves potentially a bigger hole with a fuel situation, and I still got to descend through the clown deck.
Kevin.
I think the level of panic that the pilot seemed to bring across the radio indicates that regardless of his training or experience level, that there is no instrument proficiency here to work with. I think if there were any instrument proficiency at all, then probably it would be a whole lot less panic and a whole lot, I'm in IMC, you know, more of a confession. Oh, okay, I got to get out of this. Oh, you can give me an IFR clearance. Oh, okay, well, I guess we can do that.
Right.
And that sort of thing.
Richard.
Jeff, a couple of good points were made. A third of the pilots that get involved in VFR into IMC accidents are IFR qualified. So that's something that we all should pay attention to. It's not just VFR-only pilots that are killing themselves. And we lose about 15 aircraft a year in these VFR into IMC accidents. So just something for people to keep in mind. If you're not proficient, it's still a problem for you to stumble into IMC conditions when you're not ready. And while he's right, the attitude is changing. And there was a recent accident where two pilots flying in trail with one another stumbled into IMC, and they're both VFR-only pilots. One tried to turn back and was killed in the accident. The other climbed straight ahead, flew in IMC for over an hour, and made it to his destination. So the attitude is changing about how we teach that.
And following up on that, I know you and Doug Stewart were talking about this a while back, and you were like, Doug, how can you advocate people going deeper into IMC to get out of IMC?
And you
were definitely on, apparently.
I was.
But you're changed, is what you said. You've become a true believer.
I have, and I really do attribute that to Doug Stewart, because he was the one that came, and I thought that was just radical thinking. And it turns out I'm now an advocate of it.
I want to go to the controllers at the table, who I know both of you have worked pilots who are inadvertent IMC, and pick up on something you said, Kevin. How much of your decision-making is coming from your perception of the state of the pilot? Like, not questions you've asked, but just your gut feeling about how far you can push this person. And are you looking for specific things to evaluate what they can do? Like, are they talking to you on the radio, holding a heading and altitude and panicked, versus talking to you on the radio, wandering all over the sky and panicked? Kevin.
I've definitely had it happen where you get an inadvertent VFR into IMC and the pilot's very concerned. And then after all said and done, it turns out he's really concerned because he went into a cloud without a clearance, but had the skill set, or maybe was just barely out of legal currency or whatever. And it's like, hey, can you just take an IFR clearance? And it's like, well, I can, but can I do that? Is that okay? Like, sure, cleared to fly heading, climb, maintain. And then basically it's all done. And it's like, oh, okay. And the pilot says, oh, well, I didn't realize the solution was going to be that easy. Cool, thanks. Right. And that's fine. But then other times you get a pilot that's just not instrument proficient. And now it's okay, we need to talk you into how to get out of the situation. So that's something that can be difficult to evaluate depending on how the pilot sounds on the radio.
John?
Definitely how it sounds on the radio and how your perception of how well the pilot is following your advice, instructions. I mean, I can remember one night I had one that pilot called that he was in the clouds and it's okay, you know, just gave him a heading towards the airport, didn't realize it was becoming a situation. And a minute later, he's like, God, I'm in a spin. You know, it's like, okay, let's just level the wings here. You know, the airplane will fly just fine. And two or three times lost control of it and just kept talking to him and talking to him. Finally got him on a heading, got him back to a place where he could see again. So a lot of it is perception of, and you're constantly reassessing this as you're going along too, and I'm watching it. And just to expand on that, the other piece of it is, and you can agree with this, is that controllers have virtually no training in this, no experience. There's a section in the handbook, the 71-1065, Chapter 10. It's radar assistance to VFR aircraft. There's a whole long paragraph, and it's basically nonsense stuff. It says, ask them if they're IFR capable. Ask them if they're how much fuel they have. I mean, it really does absolutely nothing to provide any clear guidance to the controller. So, as Kevin said in his original thing, this pilot hit the ATC lottery. At least he got a controller who was a pilot and had some experience. But most controllers have no experience, no training. It's not something that's done in recurrent training. It's a real sore subject.
Well, let's pick up on that training and come around to the pilot here. I'm wondering what's on the VFR into IMC survival checklist. You mentioned, Richard, that it's not even just whether you have an instrument rating or not. It's a matter of proficiency, and there are plenty of pilots who got their instrument rating just to do the next thing, and you know they're just not keeping current and proficient for sure. So what are the items that someone really needs to practice? Brass tacks, not about regulations or anything like that, in terms of aircraft control, in terms of what you need to ask for. What are the things in the emergency card for, oh, I'm in the clouds?
That's a good question. I think the elements of proficiency for IFR are stick and rudder flying, so being able to hand fly the airplane in instrument conditions, and proficiency with your avionics stack, the buttonology, if you will. And those are really two separate types of proficiency. So I think those are the two critical items.
Wally.
And in addition to that, understanding how to operate your autopilot if you have one. Our scenario pilot doesn't, but.
Well, Wally, what if the scenario pilot did? Would you change your answer? Would you still bring them up on top if they had a functioning autopilot? Or would you use the autopilot to get them to some better weather down low?
If they had a functioning autopilot and they informed me that they had it on and engaged altitude, hold, and heading mode, I would have taken them to Boeing Field.
Right. So you would have done the 180.
I would have turned them, yep.
And then, and in that case, you would have had to descend them somewhere over the water.
Sure.
Why not Olympia, which is just let them fly and break out?
That might be an option, too. I hadn't really looked at that close because I decided I wasn't going to turn them.
but definitely you've got that situation. Yeah. Okay, Kevin, go ahead.
If you're giving this pilot an autopilot,
then
I'm going to either Boeing or Tacoma.
Okay. And JP?
Yeah, the one thing, an important point that's brought up about the proficiency, I do a lot of IPCs, and I'm finding a lot of people, they are instrument rated, but they're not very proficient on their avionics. And getting into a tight is not when you want to go to G1000 school or whatever you've got in the airplane. And I run into a lot of people, and maybe they've been trained on a steam gauge airplane or something, and they're just really kind of fumbling along with the buttonology to make things work and when to activate approaches and how everything integrates with the autopilot in the airplane. So I think if you do have an aircraft that has a good avionics suite, really be comfortable with using it. Go up on a VFR day and practice, or go up with an instructor in instrument conditions and make sure you can maximize that.
Sarah.
And I see that all the time whenever I do check rides or even instruct people, is I find a lot of people are not as proficient with the avionics or even for flight as they think they are. And I've seen somebody literally dive, you know, a 60-degree angle of bank trying to pull up an approach on an iPad. So, you know, seconding what everybody's saying, it's really important to know your equipment and be able to use it without distracting yourself too much as well.
I wonder for the controllers, like you had brought up, John, I want to know, you know, what they have on board. Kevin, you in your response was saying, you know, do they have a six pack of instruments? It's like, never occurred to me. I would have assumed that they did, right? Like, as part of that emergency checklist, if you will, going into IMC, being able to tell ATC exactly what you have, is that something you'd recommend to pilots to shorten that loop if they have the wherewithal to do it? Is that useful?
Some of it is. Okay. I wouldn't necessarily start talking about what equipment you have in the airplane, because odds are pretty good the controller you're talking to has no idea what any of it is. So that is not information that would help in any way for you getting the immediate assistance that you need.
What about asking for things like no gyro turns as a VFR pilot? Don't give me headings. Give me, you know, just tell me where to turn, something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no gyro turns are good. And to build on that, that's something that is great to ask for when you're not in a bad way. If you're out practicing approaches or doing any kind of proficiency flight or even just going to A to B and you have an extra minute to do it, ask ATC for some no gyro turns because it's a handy thing to practice here and there. But also, people don't ask ATC that very often, if ever. So there's an awful lot of controllers that don't have much proficiency giving no gyro turns. So it's also helpful to ATC if you ask for them sometimes.
And for clarity, for anyone listening who's not familiar with what a no gyro turn is, we're borrowing from the instrument world here. It would be the controller telling the pilot, start turn, stop turn, start turn, stop turn. The controller is sort of remote controlling the pilot in that kind of situation. Those turns, though, it's all about standard rate turns. Wally, I can see you nodding. You know where I'm going with this question. Yep. So just go ahead and take it right from there. Like standard rate turns for the non-proficient pilot?
It's very unlikely the pilot you're talking to is going to know what a standard rate turn is, for sure.
And would you recommend somebody who's not proficient, like, try to do a textbook standard rate turn? Or is it just, like, take all the space you can and
Yeah, no, I think, you know, as Richard said, it's the turn that causes the problems. And if you can solve the problem without doing that, that's better. If you're going to have them look at that turn coordinator, I would suggest they do a half standard rate turn, or at least attempt not to go to the standard rate, but something between zero and half.
Kevin.
In this case, if I'm having the pilot look at the attitude indicator, and he's got a good attitude indicator, I'd be more inclined to just encourage them to make a shallow turn without trying to necessarily nail them down on 30 degrees or standard rate or half rate. I'd love to see them make half rate turns to minimize the likelihood of them getting vertigo. But I would, I think more importantly, it's just keep the turn shallow rather than focus on a particular bank angle or rate of turn.
Let me go back to this being on top situation. I'm wondering, for those who initially said, like, let's just get this pilot on top, calm them down, to anyone who wanted to calm them down. Okay, they're on top now. We hope they have enough gas. But the VFR over the mountains, that's a trip. I mean, that's over an hour that you're going to send them. Now this pilot's calmed down. They're on top, and maybe they'll start heading eastbound towards the mountains, and then they can see ground contact below. Is there any fear on your part of this pilot going, Yeah, I got it now. So we're good. I'm just going to descend over here on my side of the mountains, and I'll just, you know, head home. Or there's an airport down there that's where I'm going to go. As the controller, would you, Kevin, intercede and be like, no, like, really, you need to keep going over the mountains, you know, like, or do you be like, all right, you're PIC, you're going to call me again in about 15 minutes, but yeah, sure.
I think many controllers that don't have the benefit of some flying experience wouldn't necessarily appreciate that those holes can be traps. And with the benefit of flying experience, were I in that situation of a controller, I would tell them, how big is that hole? Or, like, are you sure you have plenty of room to be able to descend in a turn without punching into the clouds, and explain to them the risks of trying to descend through a small hole in the clouds. But I think there's an awful lot of controllers that would hear, oh, there's a hole in the clouds you can descend through? Great, do that.
Yeah. You see. 1200.
Yeah.
Saying the exact same thing. Yeah, I saw you nodding over there too, Wally. I mean, what now? Like, you just had a terrifying experience. Is it, you're out of the clouds, emergency over? Or is it get yourself on the ground and regroup? Sarah, you do a lot of work in Alaska, certainly, where there's a lot of terrain, there's a lot of VFR flying and long distances with not a lot of options, and in conditions that may change quite a bit over the course of the flight. Somebody gets into the clouds, they get out of the clouds. What's your advice now that people listening should put in their pocket? If I survived, now what do I need to do?
Well, Alaska is very unique. There is a huge culture that's kind of been built around scud running in Alaska. And a lot of pilots are absolutely terrified of IMC. And then there's other people who just fly in the clouds and then descend when they need to. So Alaska's probably not the best example of, you know, how things should be done. That being said, my opinion still stands that ending the emergency to me is the most important thing. You know, so having them go up above and then putting them in a scenario where they now have to make additional decisions. Oh, should I continue? Should I try to find a hole? To me, that's just exacerbating a problem with a pilot who's been clearly overwhelmed by the scenario. Only the pilot can say what they're comfortable with. And I feel like it would be a little bit overstepping as a controller to say, oh, well, I think the pilot's too flustered to continue, or you should do this. But in that scenario, I would definitely recommend that the pilot get on the ground as soon as possible and then reassess, because there's only so much you can do in the air.
Wally?
Well, contrary to what Sarah just said, a wise old pilot long ago told me, he said, man should be more like the birds. When a bird is frightened, they fly away. When man is frightened, he goes to the ground. And so sometimes that urge to get to that hole and say, okay, it's okay now, causes them to go to the ground maybe a little harder than they intended.
Fair enough.
Just wanted to jump on how Sarah was describing Alaska. It's the first time I'd heard somebody say with a straight face, the weather's too bad to go IFR, so we'll go VFR.
Yeah, it's definitely its own world out there. Another question that this whole scenario brings up is this concept of the training we do for a private pilot applicant. Is the basic attitude instrument flying that we expect of our private pilots adequate? Wally?
I think it is. I think the 3 hours for most pilots is certainly adequate. They can control the airplane, turn, climb, descend, talk on the radio. But I think one of the problems is they don't practice after they get their license. And so they're very current on check ride day. And then that proficiency just continues to go downhill until 2 years later when they're trapped like this pilot.
Yeah, you could practically watch the table move from the nods of the vigorous nod around the table there. Sarah.
One thing I will say is that out of a lot of the people who come to me for instrument practical exams, most of them do not have any experience in actual IMC. And actually just talking to instructors, a lot of instructors don't even like instructing in actual IMC, and there's a lot of double eyes who won't do it. Being in simulated conditions is very different than being in actual IMC for the first time. I remember getting my instrument rating, and I had never been in the clouds until the moment that I filed and I was solo on my own in a 172. And I have a whole story that I put together about that and presented at Oshkosh. That being said, I do feel like the training is adequate, but still, there's no amount of simulated instrument time where you have an instructor with you and you're under the hood in real VMC conditions that will prepare you for that moment where you're truly in IMC.
Do you want to share that story?
Yeah, I was a very new instrument pilot, and I had taken off in a 172 for a 42 nautical mile flight that was supposed to last around 45 minutes. It ended up being a 2.5 hour flight, and with multiple approaches, and it was quite a challenging scenario, and I was a brand new instrument pilot. And the things that I came away from that were to be more assertive and to be more prepared for things that were unexpected, in addition to having to control the plane. Because when you fly IFR, controlling the plane should be the easiest, most least amount of workload so that you have time and brain capacity to work through all the other things that come up.
You know, speaking of stories, I know, Kevin, when we were developing this scenario, one of the things that came up that I really had no insight into, I'll admit, was this EOVM, that it even existed. It was kind of a shock. And you've actually used this. Do you mind sharing that story?
Sure. The short version is, back then, we didn't have an EOVM.
Oh. So how did you pull this off?
Well, luckily, we had a road atlas. So I was able to use that, but the short version is we had a VFR into IMC. Pilot didn't have even a transponder. So it was not only was VFR into IMC, it was, from what I could tell, it was also partial panel. So it was a pretty bad situation. I tried to give him no gyro vectors for a while, and my intention was to give him a no gyro surveillance approach to get him on the ground, and it did not play that way at all, because flying, holding a heading or flying straight ahead was just too much of a challenge for this pilot. Eventually he got down through one of those holes that you hope somebody doesn't try to dive down. But when he came down, he was over a road. So I was able to ask a couple of questions about what he saw. and reference a road atlas. And then it was like, okay, you coming up on a rotary here in a minute? I don't see it now. All right, tell me if you see a rotary. Yeah, I do. Great, take a left. And I was able to get him to an airport that way, scud running very low over the ground.
I think that pilot hit the controller lottery that day as well. I'm just saying. Right. Yeah, most of our listeners aren't controllers. So this is kind of an unusual scenario for it. But this is really kind of like a proxy of what would you, the pilot, want the controller to do if you were in this situation, if you went inadvertent IMC. And climbing away from danger, keeping the wings level and climbing away. There's another interesting piece to that, a sort of repercussion. I think it's something mental, which is in order to climb, you're also giving up on seeing the ground. You're letting go of terra firma. And in doing so, it allows you to focus on the one most important thing, which is maintaining aircraft control and letting yourself calm down and then figuring out where the nearest path is to VMC. And also do get, if possible, with an instructor, some actual IMC time, because then you can understand what it's really like, and then you will really be motivated to have the skills to get back to VMC conditions.